We're back.
Give me another beer.
Hello and welcome to the Feels Like 45 podcast. I'm Cade Webb, and as always, I am joined by Dustin Ragusa. Dustin, we're going portaling, we're going recruiting. It kind of feels like the podcasts of old. How are you doing?
Yeah, it really does. I'm doing well. I hope the same for you. This one's finally kind of back to, you know, the basketball, big basketball news with Steve Lutz being hired has been ironed out. Got some, you know, portal stuff, like you mentioned, assistant coach news. But now we got spring football. And honestly, I think from this podcast until maybe spring football is completely done, it's going to be, they're going to be, you know, kind of pretty jam-packed. Might have to skip out on some of the questions and things like that, which sucks. But, you know, we've talked about it on here that these are kind of longer podcasts and we want to be able to get all the news out there for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, no question. It's and these have kind of been loaded, right? We had Barry last week who came out of nowhere a bit. We had Steve Lutz's hire the week before. So these have been a little bit abnormal for a late March, early April type of podcast. So it kind of feels good to get back into the swing of what you and I are a little bit used to. We're definitely a creature of habit in that regard, but they are loaded. And I mean, this week is no different. I mean, the basketball portal is popping. Football has multiple commits that we've got to get to. And especially, you know, all that on top of spring football is happening right now. So can't wait to get into it with you. Before we do that, I'll remind you that this podcast is brought to you by our friends at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With over 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. So shop today at www.charliehustle.com. And you know the promo code 101215. Use it for 15% off all non-sale items. That number was 30. I think it's higher than that. They're popping off over at Charlie Hustle. But Dustin, let's get right into it.
Yeah, so looking at the current team, some spring practice notes as we've been kind of going through the past couple weeks. We've had three practices since we recorded last Saturday, then Tuesday, and then yesterday, Thursday, as we're recording this on a Friday. Saturday's practice, just some notes, kind of gathering from different spots, different media sources, 247, Pokes Report, Robert Allen's radio show, Pistols Firing. Apparently, Alan Bowman has just been looking really good, really locked in. We kind of talked about it on a previous pod, Cade. He said that last year in spring, he was probably, you know, what steps do I take after I get the snap? What even is the read progression? And now he's had a little bit more time to, he knows all that stuff now. It's automatic. So now he's digesting the defense before the snap, figuring out, you know, kind of where he can go with the football, even pre-snap, post-snap, and then trying to make some plays with his legs. But it also sounds like the QB2 competition is kind of popping off now. I think both guys on Saturday, Rangel and Flores, hit Talon Shetron for a touchdown, which is good to see Talon Shetron back. I think he's still wearing a green non-contact jersey, but he's out there making plays. Cade, who do you think winds up as QB2? I'm sure there'll be an or on the depth chart, but who do you think is the real QB2 if Alan Bowman were to, you know, not trying to talk this into existence, but if he were to go down with injury, right, you think it's Rangel or Flores?
I mean, knowing Mike Gundy, you know, we're into, like, lose count. I think this is year 19, year 18. It's probably going to be Rangel. I think he values experience in the program, a little bit of loyalty also, especially in this transfer portal era. I lean towards Rangel, but if Flores is doing, you know, some really, really good stuff in camp, I think that we'll know that, number one. And number two, you could end up seeing it early in the year in a non-conference type of situation where maybe Rangel is the second off the bench, but Flores gets kind of like the Gunnar Gundy share of snaps. You know what I mean? Like the third guy reaps the reward of being the third guy. I could see that happening, but I probably would go Rangel today.
Yeah, I think so too. I know there's been a lot of, you know, positive news out of the Flores camp, especially with Robert Allen going on multiple radio shows and talking about how, you know, he could see Flores taking over as soon as this year, which still, I still don't really understand that comment completely, but I kind of agree with you. I couldn't see Gundy just giving it to Flores unless he was performing that much better than Rangel if Bowman were to go down. So I think, yeah, just seniority and what we've seen in the past makes the most sense there. So I think it's a good call by you.
Yeah, like we only saw Rudolph in, you know, so early in his career because of injury, but he was so good when he came in that it was like, well, there's your quarterback. And that's like the only example, you know, in the last several years I can think of where a younger guy jumped an older guy, but it was because of experience. And if that happens, then I could totally see that happening. But just out of like a coaching decision, I don't see it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. On the other side of the ball, Jaleel Johnson has apparently been one of the more impressive guys on the defensive line. I know he sacked Bowman on a play that was kind of like a coverage sack, but he made a nice move off the line on Saturday. So he's been making a lot of noise. I think I have some other notes about him in some of the other practices, and then just kind of wrap up the Saturday practice notes. There were 13 unofficial visitors, and Jonathan Agumadu, we mentioned that on the last pod, was there, linebacker signee. He'll be there in the summer. He said he can't wait to get to Stillwater. I'm excited to see his career kind of progress. Moving on to Tuesday, this is where we had the media sessions with Gundy and the players. So just a couple of notes on actual practice, and then we can get into those interviews. Trey Griffiths, incoming freshman wide receiver, one of the early enrollees, he's wearing a green non-contact jersey. I'm not exactly sure why, but it probably means a non-significant injury if he's still out there practicing. Brennan Presley is back and fully healthy. I think he had a green non-contact jersey on for the first few practices, so he's a full participant. And then apparently Tyler Foster, the Ohio transfer tight end, who we talked about a lot on here, we did a Twitter thread on, he's been looking really good. So that's kind of all the just general notes from Tuesday. And Cade, anything from you before we kind of get into Gundy and the players?
I saw one clip of Tyler Foster on Twitter the other day, and that's a big boy. I'm pretty excited to see what comes with him. Like, I think the skill set's going to be pretty similar to Josiah Johnson, but he just seems bigger. So I'm excited to see how that goes.
Yeah, and he's shown, you know, just kind of seeing him hit the sled and things like that. He's got the pop that Josiah Johnson had. So we'll see how it translates to the game. Coach Gundy was talking to the media, you know, a couple interesting quotes, Cade. One of them, you know, we always like to talk about the percentages and timelines and things like that Gundy throws out. You know, he's talked about, like, what is it, 15 games for a quarterback to really come into his own in his college career. He said it takes a player 18 to 24 months until they kind of get into the Oklahoma State culture and they kind of form fit into the Oklahoma State culture. It's interesting because I don't really completely know what that means, but I just love that he has all these percentages and timelines that he rattles off the top of his head.
And the thing about Mike Gundy is you'll never convince him that there's any, you know, other possibility than that. At least that's what strikes me is like, and I actually would agree with that. Like, if you look at some of the player development in the program, it's usually that mid sophomore year, late sophomore, early junior, where the light really starts to turn on. Like, I think of like a guy like Jason Taylor as a great example of that. So I'm sure it's all anecdotal, but I love the conviction that he speaks about it with.
He also mentioned, and we'll get to this in a little bit, talking about Kendall Daniels, some of the guys like that, but he mentioned how many hybrid guys they have. And he almost, when he was talking about it, if you watched the interview, it almost sounded like maybe it's a positive, but maybe it could also be a negative as well. Like so many hybrid guys on defense. He mentioned by name, Ty Williams, Lyric Rawls, Kendall Daniels. He didn't mention by name, but he said seven. So I'm assuming he's talking about Cam Epps there. And then he said, even potentially Trey Rucker can play like that. And what he's getting at is these are guys who can maybe, you know, come down into the box, play deep in coverage, play on the outside, run things down on the perimeter. But I mean, he listed five guys, and I don't know if you need five hybrid guys like that. So it was interesting to kind of talk about that. And he mentioned Kendall Daniels moving all over and things of that nature. So I don't think he was really meaning it as a negative thing, but I think, you know, listing off that many guys, you can kind of see they're having maybe not some issues, but they're trying to figure out where to best fit these guys and fit the scheme around this personnel that they have.
Well, and when you backtrack that against like the way Oklahoma State recruits, it does seem, especially in the defensive backfield, like that they kind of recruit aptitude and athleticism first, and then they'll figure out where to put you. So I kind of feel like this is a product of their own doing. And again, I don't think it's a bad thing either. There's another guy that like I think is maybe a little bit of a tweener in Landon Cleveland. Like, I don't know how big he is, and they may play him at that Rover at some point in his career. But is that going to be the best place? We have no clue. So I would say that there's at least six that come to mind in the defensive backfield alone. That's not even talking about like a Colin Oliver, who's made a career as a tweener. So again, I think that it's a byproduct of the way Oklahoma State recruits, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a good call out on the recruiting in Cleveland. Yeah, obviously, you know, right now, size-wise, he is not a very big guy. So to put him in these different spots, he is a perfect definition of an incoming guy who I think fits into that hybrid player definition Gundy was talking about as well. Speaking of incoming guys like Landon Cleveland, we've talked about Josh Ford already. Gundy was asked who's kind of holding their own out of the incoming guys. He said on offense, it's Josh Ford, the Stillwater tight end. And then he said on defense, Armstrong Nottam is holding his own physically. He said their heads are spinning kind of scheme wise and other things like that. But both of these guys are kind of holding their own from a physicality standpoint, which it's just great to hear because those were two of the guys that we kind of called out. We were talking to Adam Lunt. Josh Ford and Armstrong Nottam are guys that you could maybe plug and play right away if you had to from a physicality standpoint.
Which I would expect their heads are spinning, but I do love that those are two guys that we've called out by name in this podcast as like they appear to be physical freaks. And I think that that's maybe the only way you get noticed early on is if you're just head and shoulders kind of above everybody else in your, you know, either on in your unit or your recruiting class or whatever. So I love hearing that. Not surprising necessarily, though.
Yeah. And with the portal about to open back up, you know, April 15th, I think it's like April 15th. Maybe it's April 16th because it's like at midnight. It's either April 15th or April 16th and just open for 15 days. Going to the April 30th window, Gundy was asked about the portal and quote, he said, "We have a lot of maturity and a really good cohesive team right now that's probably not going to want to expand out. That doesn't mean there might not be some of them that just want an opportunity somewhere else. You're dealing with a large quantity here. There's 124 of them out here right now. Percentages tell you that could happen to three or four of them." It sounds like, Cade, and you and I expect this, like a couple of guys might hit the portal. But I really don't think there's going to be that many. And if they do, I think they're going to be guys that literally had like no shot of playing at all here. Not like a guy that's in the two deep or who we think is in the two deep right now.
Yeah, I mean, I have heard nothing that would suggest that. So I totally agree with you. It would be surprising to see a contributor go at this point.
Even a Garrett Rangel, you know, you saw his Twitter reply where he said, basically, I'm not getting in the portal. So he would have been one of the guys that I expected. If not him, I don't really see anywhere else where there's even like that much depth besides offensive line where you'd want somebody to leave. And if, you know, if one of those younger offensive linemen leaves, I don't think that would be a huge shock, but that means it's probably not someone that's on the two deep currently.
I totally agree with that.
Last note on Gundy. Everybody saw, I'm sure his house is up for sale. He said it's too big of a house for two people. It needs to be for a young family that has a lot of energy and wants to be on a ranch and goof around and have a swimming pool and all that kind of stuff. He said that's kind of past his time. So I think I had, not trying to brag about people that I know, but I think I had six or seven people send me that message, maybe more than that. So about his house being for sale. So I think that is the reason. It's just a little too big for the empty nesters.
I have a scorching take about this whole thing. Don't care. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
the amount of media coverage over that one thing was insane. I mean, Sports Illustrated sent me a push notification about Mike Gundy's house being for sale and why. It's like, okay, can we just like not? So all the rumors swirling was really obnoxious, but yeah, it makes total sense. That's a massive house for two people.
Hey, you know, I love that take because I hate any kind of media news, local media stuff that's not on the field or recruiting.
So. Yeah, like he's selling his house. And, you know, I think the doom and gloom folks are like, what's that mean? It means that it's a massive house for two people. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to think through that. So anyway, I'll shut up.
It is funny, though. I saw Marshall Scott from PFB interviewed Riker Half, who we'll talk about in a little bit, one of the new commits in the 2025 class. He said one of his favorite things on his visit was Gundy's house. So he's going to need to still have a cool house.
Oh, I don't think that he's going to just, you know, start renting all of a sudden. I think he'll get some apartment. Pretty cool. Yeah, I don't think you'll see him at University Crossings or whatever that is. So, it will be fine. He will probably build a smaller, you know, lifelong home in Stillwater, and it'll make a whole lot of sense. So.
Yeah, maybe just a tent out in a farm field somewhere.
Yeah, I just hope he hears this and the way I defended him. And I would love to see the new place at some point. Hope it feels like a home to them.
Yes, we would take an invite for sure. I know the Extreme Campers, if you sign up for Extreme Camp, I know you get to do a dinner there one night. So that's a pretty cool perk.
Maybe that's part of the downsizing is, well, my house doesn't actually fit that anymore, so I don't have to do that. I like it. Strategic.
I like that as well. Yeah, he's pulling himself out of the running for some of those events. I like that. I would do the same. So
yeah,
some of the players, not a ton of info from these guys that I pulled out, Cade. That's not kind of just fluff stuff, but I did think, you know, Brennan Presley, you could see him kind of get uncomfortable and kind of cringe a little bit when asked about how hard it is to kind of pull off the gas and take a step back like Gundy wants some of the veterans to do at practice. He basically was saying it's very difficult for a guy like him because when he's out there, he's going 100% and he wants to be out there as much as possible. So it's funny when you actually watch these guys and don't just like read the quote. Like if you have the time to go watch, I would always suggest doing it because their body language when they get asked some of these questions is pretty interesting. And you could tell Presley does not like being told to chill out on the reps.
I would imagine at this point, like you kind of let the guy do what they want to do in practice, especially when it's Brennan Presley. So I could see that.
Yeah. He also said Rashad Owens, when he was asked about him and how he thinks he'll perform this year, he said Rashad's confidence is at an all-time high. So all-time high confidence, Rashad Owens sounds like a Rashad Owens that I want to see out there on the field for sure.
Yeah. One I wouldn't want to get in front of either.
Dude, I don't know if you saw that OSU Max, or I think Pistols Firing put it out too, but the interview with him, I think it was last week's practice. So two Tuesdays ago, he is a monster. Like he's bigger than most of the tight ends I think we'll see in the Big 12 or the same size.
He's a physical freak. And I don't know how it kind of flies under the radar, but it makes sense. Some of the physical catches he makes, it's because he's just so much bigger and stronger than the D-back going against him. So,
yeah, it's pretty incredible. And then last thing Presley said that I thought was interesting, he said he's actually gained weight. So again, you know, it's not like we're trying to like prove the spring roster wrong. And I know I'm the one who did all the analysis on it. So I'm being like hypocritical now. I don't think any of the weights are right. And honestly, don't even think the heights are right. I think some of them times they just ask these guys and they put that
poked holes
on the
in
roster.
It. We poked holes in it pretty heavily. So, and I would say for Brennan not to, you know, it would take a cheeseburger for him to gain weight, I would think. Like just the amount he runs around, I can't imagine how hard it is for him to maintain weight at that slot.
Oh, he said position. It's impossible.
Yeah.
He said it's so hard for him to keep weight on.
Yeah, I said would. I meant to say would not take a cheeseburger because that guy is, you know, he's kind of like an Energizer bunny on the field. So I can't imagine trying to put weight on.
So, Cade, up next with Colin Oliver, this is where the juice was of the player interviews. He starts off, and Colin's always in a great mood. He's a fun guy to watch interview. He just seems like a really kind of laid back, fun guy to be around. So he brought the four man front instantly. He also brought up Kendall Daniels being in the linebacker room and him mainly being with the defensive linemen, which I think he was in the defensive line room a lot last year too, even playing that Will linebacker because they moved him up on the line a lot. I think I did. I can't remember that Twitter thread I did where I showed how much he was on the line and how much he wasn't, but it was a large percentage of time that he was on the line. Not like a majority, but more than I think people thought with him switching to linebacker. Then we see Kendall Daniels in the Twitter pick from Nardo at his house eating. He's with the linebackers, which also, I don't think I saw Poesa Utu in there. So maybe a guy to watch for the portal. I have no idea. Maybe he just wasn't able to make it to the dinner stick or something like that. But Kendall Daniels in the linebacker room. So I said last week, we had the quote about moving Kendall Daniels up to the line more. I said pump the brakes because they did that a lot last year, especially in the bowl game. I wanted to see some definitive like depth chart or hear from somebody at practice that he's truly running a linebacker spot. Well, Cade, I think you can let off the brakes now because with that Twitter pick and with Colin Oliver talking about it and some of the stuff we're hearing, he may not be a true linebacker on the depth chart. They may still list him at safety, but I could also see a star title for him, yeah. You know, that linebacker safety hybrid, or even Nardo coming up with like a different terminology. You and I love the terminology, you know, like a pistol safety or something like that might be cool. But I just, all that to say, and I want to kick it back over to you, and I know I'm kicking it back over to you with a lot that I just said, but are you at all confused why they went out and hired a 3-3 stack similar to an Iowa State John Heacock defensive coordinator, made this big deal about it last year? And then, I mean, are they really going to completely abandon it and go back to more of like a 4-2-5
in 1 year
defense?
Yeah.
And even like, I guess if Daniels truly is labeled a linebacker, maybe even you call it a 4-3, but I think it'd be more of like a 4-2-5 or like a dime, which would be, I guess, a 4-1-6 because you'd have six DBs out there. So you'd call it dime package, which teams have done. These aren't like things that no one's ever done before. It's just confusing to me. Randolph, also a guy who has a lot of experience with the odd front. So it's just a little confusing to me and why I've kind of continued to say maybe pump the brakes, because it blows my mind if they really abandon that fast. And I'm still skeptical that they're going to do that.
I mean, what if they just do a lot of both? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
multiple. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
That's kind of where I think the most logical conclusion is, because I don't know how you bring a guy like Brian Nardo in and abandon it after 1 year. The other side of that coin is that the talent on your roster may suggest that a 4-2-5 puts the best guys in the right spot. Colin Oliver on the line, potentially moving Kendall Daniels into a linebacker hybrid type of role. But you're still, I mean, a little bit thinner, I think, on the defensive line than you would like, which is why I think that they could end up, you could end up seeing a lot of multiple types of looks. That's kind of where I'm going to end it, because I don't think they abandon it completely. But I think a 4-2-5 puts you in a better position with the talent you have on your roster.
Yeah, you got, and that's what, you know, I've brought it up talking about some of the Phil Bennett change he made to the 2015 Baylor defense, because I was reading that book by Cody Alexander recently where he dove into that a lot. So teams have done this, but I think you and I are on the same page, and where we've kind of stayed, like we said after last season, they need to make some moves based on personnel, and we think they need to be more multiple. But, you know, from everything local media is saying that these guys are saying or things that they've seen, it sounds like they're completely going back to the four-man front. The only person that's not saying that is Gundy by still mentioning the three down sometimes. So all the players have said it. So I'm on the same page as you. I think you have to make personnel changes. I think the moving Kendall Daniels to linebacker or even a star like hybrid linebacker safety role is very smart. I think they do need to be more multiple. I think they relied, especially early in the season, a little bit too much on the odd front with Colin Oliver off the line of scrimmage, and they changed it. They were pretty multiple, I think, as they moved on through the season last year, especially looking back at my defensive kind of charting notes from those games. But man, if they go completely four down and really kind of abandon that three down odd front and have Oliver on the line all the time, I'm not saying it's a wrong decision. I just, it'll kind of blow my mind after all the kind of uproar and new hiring of a defensive coordinator from last year.
Yeah, it will be a surprise, but it is where I think this kind of looks like it's headed. So anyway,
it's very interesting. Along with that, Colin Oliver, I know we spent a second on him, but he had some really good stuff. So he was pretty critical of himself in the pass rushing aspect from last year. He said he was not a good pass rusher last year, and it's one of the things he's focusing on as we move into this year, specifically his handwork. He also said he loves playing edge rusher. So if the one positive will be if they do truly go four-man front, you've got Colin Oliver in his best headspace because that's what he likes to play. He also mentioned Greg Richmond is at Sam Houston now. Our guy Michael P. pointed this out to me before I watched the interview. Shout out Michael P. I didn't know that, and I tried to look it up, and I don't see anything about Greg Richmond being there. Maybe I missed it on the coaches page or something, but thought that was pretty interesting. And then he also had some great things to say about Coach Randolph. And the last thing he mentioned, Cade, he said he's around 242, 245-ish right now. It's about 10 pounds heavier than what he played at last year.
Nice.
The fact that he can get to that weight and still maintain the same speed and everything is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it also kind of shows that there's a reason that they're going to put him at that spot. Like, he's still a little bit undersized, but I think about some of the really good players at that size and height that have played that position in this conference. I'm not going to name them because a lot of them came from a team down south, but there's a kind of prototype for guys like him. So really, really excited to see what happens with him this year.
Yeah, me too. Moving on to the last guy, just a couple notes. Preston Wilson, he had a lot of good things to say about Isaiah Glass, said he's definitely going to play this year. I know we talked about he was getting a lot of reps with the ones because Springfield is out, Cooper kind of in and out. But I do think he's a guy that's going to play and maybe even start game one. Cam Smith, if you haven't watched the film room that OSU Max put out with Cam Smith and his brother Dylan Smith, cornerback and safety, it's awesome. These guys, you now know why these guys have played and played so young in their careers. They know their stuff. They're talking coverages. They're explaining, you know, using terminology that they also are able to kind of explain to someone who doesn't know the terminology. It's them and Rashetti Jones. It's really cool. You should definitely check that out. Cam Smith also said that he and Corey Black, he didn't say it like he was bragging about it, but he basically said that he and Corey Black are running with the ones at cornerback, which is what you and I expected. Yeah. So no surprise there. And then twice in his media interview, he said new playbook. He said the guys are doing well with the new playbook. And then later on, he said that Dylan is adapting well to the new playbook, which
just
kind of goes back to this, maybe a move back to that Jim Knowles, Derek Mason, 4-2-5. It also could mean just making some changes coverage wise. If you're going to put one of the safeties in the box a lot or make them a star, and you could still kind of stay in a type of 3-3 stack. Cause if you look at what Iowa State does, they have that middle safety in the box a lot, especially depending on who they have playing that position. But I just thought that was really interesting to hear. And then last note on the players, DeJon Stribling, not a ton from his interview. It was like a separate player interview. It was with Megan Robinson, who does the Believe in OK State podcast. Shout out to those guys. He had a soft like cast brace on his wrist still. So still kind of working back from that injury last year.
Yeah, I will say the picture of the linebacker room is a little bit like overweighted if you're going to a 4-2-5. Like, you may have way too many linebackers if you go primarily 4-2-5. That's why I think that they're going to go multiple. I'm going to stand by that until the season starts.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Our guy Adam Lunt is with us. Shout out to Adam.
Okay, well, okay, great. I feel good about
We're
you.
We're all on the multiple page. We're all on the multiple page. So, okay, Last notes from Thursday practice, and then we can get into some recruiting stuff and move on to basketball. Thursday's practice was the longest one of the season so far. According to Robert Allen, they went, I think, for over 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours, and got a ton of 11 versus 11 work.
Nice.
Really extensive work on the run game. I know they did the 4-minute drill on offense. Alan Bowman put together a drive that ended in a Logan Ward 53-yard game-winning field goal, which he nailed, so that's pretty cool. Jahlil Johnson, still getting a ton of praise. I talked about him earlier. On offense, Tyke Andrews continues to make plays. There were 12 unofficial visitors there. And then, Caden, a note going into Saturday's practice. We'll talk about the visitors coming, but they're going to have Big 12 officials there for the first time. So, to me, that signals scrimmage. That's a scrimmage practice. So, that'll be pretty cool. I'm sure there will be some fun notes. If any of our listeners are at that Saturday practice, feel free to send us notes because we will definitely take them.
We'll take them.
We unfortunately are unable to attend a practice this year due to some scheduling issues. So any notes you guys got, send them our way.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
All right, Cade, moving on to recruiting. As we mentioned, we're back where official visits can happen. So the official visits are full go on all these Saturdays. I think they're looking at this 2025 class being around 20. I know we said like 16 to 18-ish previously. I think they could probably take in 20, still grab some portal guys with, you know, so many guys leaving next year, 6-year guys, 7th-year guys, 5-year guys that might, you know, guys that might enter the NFL draft. So I think we're kind of looking at that. We did, though, Cade, for the first time in a while, get some commits. Three of them to talk about, guys we've talked about before. But we'll start it off with the first one who announced, Jalen Beckley. These are all 2025 guys. Offensive tackle, 6'4", 290, from Trinity Christian Academy in Addison, Texas. He's a 3-star, which, you know, when you talk offensive linemen, almost all of them are 3-star. If you're a 4-star or 5-star offensive lineman, I think you're probably like one of the 20, 15 best in the country. So 3-star offensive lineman is a solid offensive lineman. He's number 67 rated offensive tackle, number 137 rated player in Texas. He held more than 20 offers, big time offers as well. Auburn, Clemson, Baylor, Duke, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, LSU, OU, Tennessee, Texas A&M. He was previously committed to Clemson. He committed to them on March 1st, and then he decommitted and committed to Oklahoma State. So this is not, I know a lot of people, when they see these offensive line commits, they're like, another diamond in the rough. We'll see him play by his senior year. This is a very, very talented guy. He was on Robert Allen's radio show. I listened to the interview. The dude is, he sounded like a 20-year vet in the NFL. Just very, very smart, sharp guy, knows a lot about football, says he wants to be a PA for an orthopedic surgeon as his career path choice. Just very sharp, all-around guy. Watched film on him, Cade. I know you got a chance to watch a little bit too, primarily at right tackle, and he's pretty athletic. He's got some GT counter pull experience. I think the first play of his YouTube film is GT counter. Good in pass pro. I think overall, you know, he may not be the fastest lineman, and I think there's some technique stuff that he can improve on, but he's pretty good side to side. And he's very strong, obviously, at the high school level.
Yeah, I am a big fan of this one. At 6'3.5", 295, that's what 24/7 lists him at. He is athletic, and his offer list, I mean, you just rattled it off. It speaks for itself. So this is not a diamond in the rough. I think that this is going to end up being one of the better offensive line recruits that Oklahoma State has brought in, not through the portal, in quite some time.
Agreed. I think he's a really talented player who we could see as one of those offensive linemen who maybe plays a little early, which we don't see a lot in the Oklahoma State program, but I think this guy has the talent. Next up, we've got Kyle Kia, edge guy on defense, 6'4", 205 pounds from, I think, Mount Carmel Catholic in Wichita, Kansas. 3-star, number 75 rated edge, number 11 rated player in Kansas, which produces some good high school products. He chose Oklahoma State over offers from schools like Iowa State, Kansas, Marshall. This past season, he helped the Crusaders to 11-2 overall record in the program's first trip back to the 5A state title game since 1987. He had 71 total tackles, 11 for loss, including 4 sacks, as well as 2 fumble recoveries. He told Pokes Report that he's being recruited as the Leo defensive end, so think kind of that Colin Oliver spot if in the 4-down. And he said this spring he's working to get back into shape because he just came off surgery a few weeks ago. He said he's a few weeks out from being back into kind of full training mode. Watching his film, you see him as the Will linebacker, the edge, even the strong side linebacker sometimes. Really good tackler. Might not be the fastest guy side to side, maybe like a Xavier Benson. Maybe not has the best start-stop, but he's got good straight line speed when he gets going. He's athletic. Kind of reminded me maybe of more of a Brock Martin, Trace Ford type Leo than a Colin Oliver type, but I really like Kyle Key as well.
Yeah, I like him too, and very familiar with Capen. They were in our division in high school, so I know them well, hated playing them, and that's a program that cranks out some talent. A lot of times in golf, though, so this is nice to see a guy from Wichita making a splash in Stillwater.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I should have let you pronounce that, seeing it was from Wichita. I didn't even
Capen,
think about that
before. And I hate them. They're very good at everything.
But we do not hate Kyle Kia, so if he's
no, we like you. No.
Last guy, Cade, this is a guy, probably won't go into a ton of detail on him. I think we've talked about him like 3 or 4 times on the pod. Riker Half, offensive lineman, 6'6", 310 pounds, from Owosso High School in Owosso, Oklahoma. 3-star, number 82 rated interior offensive lineman, number 17 rated player in Oklahoma. Anytime you get a top 20 guy in Oklahoma, I think it's big time. You know, all these guys just recently visited, along with Beckley, who we just talked about, and then Isaiah Kima, who was a 2023 signee, but he's coming off his Mormon religious mission, the LDS. These are 3 offensive linemen now in this class. When, you know, we've had some recent classes where they've talked about, man, we should be getting more offensive linemen. Are we going to get anybody out of the portal? Well, we've had all these veteran guys. And I know you still got to develop guys, but in the portal era, if you take all these high school guys, they're probably going to transfer out. So you've got a bunch of guys leaving, and now you've got a bunch of guys coming in. They might even sign a few more, but Riker Half, primarily right tackle on the film I saw, moves really well up to the second level. Maybe not as athletic as Beckley, but he might be more technically sound at this time. He's got some pulling experience and very strong. So love Riker Half, love Beckley, love that they're going to get these young offensive linemen to get into Coach Glass's system, into Charlie Dickey's program. And I think these are two guys who we could see play maybe a little earlier than some of the previous offensive linemen have played in their Oklahoma State tenure.
I was going to say the exact same thing, and I think that these two are two of the most talented non-portal guys that they've brought in. I mean, Riker Half is like, 6'5", what is it, 305 is the weight? I had it pulled up and then lost it. But
I think they have him at like 6'5 and a half, I think, on 247 now and 310.
So there you go. Physically imposing, and his offered list, I got to say, I love a guy that decommits from Clemson and comes to Oklahoma State. But anytime you see an Iowa State, like Minnesota, like just a kind of corn-fed offensive lineman, that's what I want. And these are two guys I'm really excited about.
Yeah, and Half, and thank you for mentioning that. I didn't even mention his offer list. Another guy who, you know, the schools you mentioned, he was at Arkansas recently for an unofficial visit. So some good gets on the offensive line. Circling back to last week really quick before we get to this upcoming week's official visits, there was one official visit who I didn't have on my list originally, so my miss there. Adam Schobel, he is a Baylor commit, 2025 QB, 6'4", 190, from Columbus High School in Columbus, Texas, 4-star guy, number 17 rated QB in the country, number 39 rated player in Texas. He visited, didn't change his commitment or anything after the visit, but this is a guy who would be a really good get at the quarterback position. He was the District 12 3A1 co-offensive MVP last season. He's thrown for 5,200 yards the last two seasons and 66 touchdown passes. His dad, former TCU and NFL tight end, he was also his high school coach. Got to keep an eye on him. I think he's also maybe visiting Houston as well. So a guy whose recruitment, even though he's committed, seems to still be open, and the quarterback position, which is, you know, one we always like to key on when we're talking about recruiting. So that would be a big get if they're able to flip him from Baylor.
Yeah, our QB room, if you go get him, is going to be young and a little bit loaded by the time Alan Bowman steps off campus this next year. So that would be a really big and interesting get.
Yeah, I agree. This weekend coming up, there'll be 8 official visitors. One of them that was supposed to be there, ESPN Top 300, 4-star running back Michael Turner. Talked about him on the pod, North Richland Hills High School in Richland, Texas. He has a track meet, so he is going to be try to come one of the next 2 weekends. So if you were saw something that expected Michael Turner here and now you don't see him, I think OSU is still in his mix of schools that he's interested in. He just had a track meet, and obviously a guy that loves track didn't want to miss that. So wanted to call that out. For the visitors this week, K, just so we don't spend too much time on it, I'll just run through the list with their measurables, offer list, and then we can kind of recap if that's good with you. First one up, Royal Capel, wide receiver, 5'10", 173 from Cibolo Steel in Texas. He's a 3-star, number 146 receiver, number 143 player in Texas. He's got over 15 offers, some schools like Baylor, Cincy, Duke, Indiana, Missouri, OU, Oregon. Next up, Alex McPherson, a guy we've talked about on here, not rated at this time. Defensive end, 6'4", 248 pounds from IMG Academy in Florida. He's got offers from Pittsburgh, Boston College, Indiana, Michigan State, Ohio. This is a guy that Paul Randolph recruited at Indiana and is now recruiting at Oklahoma State. Anthony Ogamuru, we've talked about him before, the offensive lineman from Elgin, 6'5", 295, not rated at this time, but he's got some big-time offers, including K-State, Tennessee, OU, Missouri, North Carolina, Cincy, Duke, Iowa State, TCU, Virginia Tech. Next up, we got Mason Posa, linebacker, 6'3", 208, from La Cueva in New Mexico. He's a 4-star, the number one rated player in New Mexico, number 17 linebacker. I won't even go through his entire offer list. It's basically every big school you can think of. I'll just say the first one, and that'll kind of give you an idea, Alabama. So this is a big-time guy that they got on campus. Next up, Cam Powell, wide receiver, 6'1", 188 pounds from McKinney High School. He is not rated at this time, but he's got a bunch of offers. I know he's going to visit Arkansas and Colorado State coming up soon. Jaden Sanders, talked about him a lot on the podcast, safety, 6'2", 180 pounds from Kilgore, Texas, 3-star, number 34 rated cornerback in the nation, number 48 rated player in Texas. He's got offers from Baylor, who he's visiting soon, Texas Tech, who he's visiting soon, Arizona State, Kansas, Houston, Kansas State, Michigan State, and TCU. Then you've got Nusi Tamopio. That definitely is wrong. Defensive end, 6'2", 215 pounds from Saratoga Springs in Utah. He's a 3-star, number 66 rated edge, number 10 rated player in Utah. And then finally, Xavier Okpunu, defensive tackle, 6'3", 273 pounds from Denton Guyer. 3-star, number 109 rated defensive lineman, number 157 rated player in Texas. A guy that is going to be visiting Florida and Texas A&M coming up. Cade, this might be the most stacked weekend so far. Not in terms of quantity, but in terms of quality. I mean, you've got Jaden Sanders, one of the better safeties Oklahoma State is recruiting, and a guy I know they really want. You've got Mason Posa, a 4-star linebacker. And you've got guys with, you know, recruiting lists like Alabama, Arkansas, taking visits to Florida. So they're going after some big fish, and they've got them on campus this weekend.
Yeah, it sounds like a big recruiting weekend. Definitely agree and love the overall, I mean, kind of, I don't know how you would say this, but like the depth of the profiles on each of these guys, like these are each one of these, you could say, yeah, Oklahoma State should try to get that guy. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of fluff. It's a loaded visitor weekend this weekend.
I completely agree. And the last recruiting note, just wanted to throw it out there. Recent offer. When it's 2025 class, we've been talking about it. It is actually Adam Schobel's cousin.
Oh,
John Schobel. So he is a 2025 edge, 6'4", 215 pounds from the same high school, Columbus High School in Columbus, Texas. He's not rated right now, but he is a two-time District 12 3A1 defensive MVP. He also plays on the offensive side of the ball, my understanding. And he's got offers from, obviously, Baylor, where Adam is committed, TCU, Houston, where TCU, where his uncle played, Sam Houston State, Texas State, UTEP, and Missouri State. I think, you know, if you're able to get John, maybe that convinces Adam to flip from Baylor. So love the idea there from the coaching staff. And Cade, before we move to basketball, I wanted to get your take. We talked about the transfer portal opening next week. Pete Nakos from On3 is reporting that OSU is a destination to watch for Arkansas offensive lineman Andrew Chamblee. Former four-star recruit, spent the last two seasons at Arkansas. He redshirted, but then the next year was selected to the All-SEC freshman team, starting eight games this past season. He's 6'6", 318 pounds, just a big dude, has played primarily all of his snaps at left tackle, 15 at right tackle, but 405 total snaps, recruited heavily by Oklahoma State coming out of high school. He took an official visit there. Florida State, Kansas State, SMU, I think are other schools that have been linked to him. What are your thoughts here?
I think you got to
get this guy if you can get him, but they've got a lot of guys in the offensive line room right now.
Yeah, I would guess that this probably doesn't happen, but you look at Dalton Cooper, who is going into his last year. I mean that spot's going to be open, right? And we've seen them fill it with the portal guy before. We saw them bring in Isaiah Glass when you had a, you know, 2-year letterman in Jake Springfield. And so I could totally see it happening, but you're right. They're loaded at the offensive line, but they may not really care. Like, I wonder if Gundy is so burned by bad offensive lines. He's like, I'm just not going to let it happen again. I'm going to recruit as many as it takes.
Well, what if they get Chamblee and you've got a starting offensive line. Say you put Chamblee at right tackle, Cooper would prefer to play left tackle. I thought he was solid there last year. Then you've got Cooper, Brooks, Mahalski. Maybe you move Glass in at guard because he is athletic enough. We talked about this when we broke him down. And then you've got Chamblee at right tackle, which would have your backup line would consist of our guys that could come in off the bench would be Cole Birmingham, Preston Wilson, Jake Springfield, Taylor Materico, Austin Kowecki, Jacoby Sanders. No, I mean, it's almost to the point where If you were to get Chamblee, I think someone would almost have, or multiple guys would have to transfer because your second offensive line could maybe start for some of the lower teams in the Big 12.
It would be the best offensive line in terms of talent that Oklahoma State's had since Joe Wickline left, though. I mean, but probably not even close. And you have to wonder if like Ollie Gordon being here has anything to do with this.
Oh, 100%. Great call
like,
out.
They're basically like, we have a one-time opportunity to just run the ball down anybody's throat and we need to go get anybody that's willing to do it at a high level. And I would actually guess that that's probably a factor in this.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it is a great call out from you. And Cade, I know we went long on basketball, but we are football, but we've been doing a lot of basketball recently. So I appreciate you guys.
I missed
working
it.
Through that with me and going through the recruiting and everything like that. But Cade, I think I'm ready for basketball, and there's a bunch of news this week for basketball.
Dustin, you go get a throat lozenge. You go get a seltzer water. Rest your vocal cords while we listen to a word from Classic Overland, and we'll be right back. We want to say a quick thank you to sponsor the Feels Like 45 podcast, Classic Overland. Classic Overland specializes in restoring original Land Rover Defenders designed with your unique style and specifications. They go to great lengths to find quality vintage Defenders before they begin the restoration process, and their team of experts will guide you through the various exterior and interior options to create the perfect build. Our friends Luke Reed and Robert Dennis of Classic Overland are both Oklahoma State graduates and will work with you through the process to ensure you have a great experience. And in addition, if you purchase a Classic Overland Defender and mention this podcast, the Feels Like 45 podcast, Their team will donate a portion of the proceeds to the Pokes with a Purpose NIL Collective. To learn more, you can visit their website, classicoverland.com, and you can contact Luke and Robert at robert@classicoverland.com. Thank you, and go Pokes! All right. Well, Dustin, it was an overdue football heavy opening, and I miss listening to you talk about all of these things, and so that was fantastic. Thanks for walking us through it. In terms of basketball, though, this is probably as entertaining a 2 weeks as I can remember for Oklahoma State basketball, as you've got coaching changes, portal out, potential portal in, and I mean, a complete and total rebuild taking place in Gallagher-Iber Arena. And one of the most interesting things, Dustin, is we're starting to see Steve Lutz build out his staff. I mean, he's already brought in two, the rumor is three assistant coaches, and you can have four. So his staff is almost done.
Yeah, Cade, I love it. And thank you for that intro into basketball. One of them, Cade, and we could start with him if you're okay with that. One of the guys, we're not normally right about stuff, but we think if he brings anybody over, we think it'd maybe be two guys, and we went with Tim McAllister and Robert Guster. Both guys, he had some McAllister he worked with at Creighton, and then Guster worked for Danny Casper, who Lutz worked under, and both of those guys had ties to Texas. Guster with even more ties to Texas than McAllister did, and he... Robert Guster, who was on his staff last year at Western Kentucky, he spent 10 seasons at UTSA playing under former Oklahoma State player Brooks Thompson. Rest in peace, Brooks Thompson. And he also spent time at Texas State with Danny Casper. So he has recruited the Texas area for what? Is that like 18 years or something like that? 19 years? And seems like a guy who really knows basketball, and I love it. I know I'm going kind of out of order here because I think that's the last one that was announced this week. But since he's a guy we talked about on the pod already, I thought it was cool to bring him up.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a defense first kind of coach, and it's been really interesting to see the way Lutz has built this staff, because Guster goes defense first. Lutz goes defense first. Another guy in James Miller slants a little defense first. So it has been a little bit interesting to see the way that things have been constructed early on. But I think that this is a really good recruiting get. You go look at Rob Guster's, just his Twitter profile. He's got so many Oklahoma preps, so many Texas preps followers. Like, this is a guy that's heavily connected in Texas. And you pair that with Steve Lutz, and you have to think that at some point in the very near future, they're going to start recruiting Texas really well.
Yeah, I love it. And I think it brings kind of that veteran guy in, especially when you've got, you know, some of the younger guys on the staff, like a guy who we can get to next. Apparently, Steve Lutz will be retaining Keaton Page on staff. Keaton's now been through what? Three coaches?
Is that true?
As an assistant
with
coach?
Underwood?
I think so. He's been on staff. Okay, yeah, I have the note here. Page has been on staff in some capacity the past 11 seasons under three former coaches. Oh, so fourth coach then. It says Travis Ford, Brad Underwood, and Mike Boynton. I think he was maybe a GA for Ford, and then I think he was like a player development guy under Underwood and started as that under Boynton and then moved to an assistant coach. I think that's the path.
Yeah,
that he kind of took there. His 17th overall season at Oklahoma State, if you include his time as a player. Cade, this was one, I think I asked you, who's one guy that you think from the current staff they would keep? And just from the stuff we'd had heard from players' parents, high school recruiting, stuff like that, Keaton Page is apparently beloved in the Oklahoma area, not only as a player, but as a coach, as a person. So it's cool to see them keep him around. I know you and I both think it would be cool and maybe bit more beneficial for his career if he were able to leave for a little bit and come back and kind of get some experience outside of his comfort zone. But this is a guy who you and I both love, and I think it's great that Lutz is keeping him around.
I think it's a really smart thing for Steve Lutz to do, is to keep Keaton Page around. I mean, that's a guy that is as connected to Oklahoma State basketball as anybody in that building. So it makes a lot of sense. It also makes a lot of sense for retainment of the current roster. You never know like what the relationships actually looked like last year. Like is there a tie between Keaton Page and Brandon Garrison that could help you down the line? I don't think that that's why this was made. I really think it's the tether to Oklahoma State basketball and the tradition there that Keaton Page has, and probably his strong desire to see his program succeed again as well. And so I think that that's a really smart hire when you can have four assistant coaches on the bench.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's going to be interesting to see who the last one is. But so you've got the guy with Oklahoma State ties. So he kept a guy with Oklahoma State ties that's beloved in the recruiting area from everything we've heard, and a former Oklahoma State great player, which, you know, it's awesome to just have that guy on your staff. Then you're bringing in kind of the seasoned vet who has the Texas ties and the ties to your current head coach and was with him on his most recent staff,
yep,
in Robert Guster. Then you bring over maybe one of the, I don't know, one of the most prolific non-head coach assistant, like guys that didn't make the jump this year from assistant coach to head coach. This guy's got to be in that next tier in James Miller coming from Mississippi State. I think this is a pretty well-rounded staff, yes, overall.
I think James Miller is a great, great hire. I'm not going to like disparage the previous benches on Oklahoma State's, you know, side of things. But if I was looking at a guy like James Miller versus what you had, this is probably the best assistant coach you've had come to Oklahoma State in a decade.
Yeah, and he, look, this is the guy that was the associate head coach for Mississippi, yep, State, and Chris Jans, who made the tournament. This is a guy, Chris Jans, who's been, you know, a very popular name in the coaching search, and he was the associate head coach there. He was at New Mexico State for three WAC regular season titles, two WAC conference tournament titles, and two NCAA tournament berths. Prior to his time at New Mexico State, he was at Omaha. He was at Arkansas State. He had one season under current Texas Tech head coach Grant McCaslin at North Texas. And he spent 3 years as a head coach at New Mexico Junior College. So this is a very, very well-rounded guy. The only issue with Miller, Cade, is if Oklahoma State has some good, like the next two seasons are solid, James Miller's gone and he's getting a head coaching,
sure,
job somewhere.
Yeah, no, like no question. And I think that would be okay, because that would mean that Oklahoma State probably has turned things around. And I would love to see our assistant coaches get poached for better jobs. That's what happens when you're good.
Cade, just to end it, and I want to throw it back to you and get your take, but I sometimes get too orange Kool-Aid, too over the top on some of my takes when I get excited. I love this assistant coaching staff so far. I think it's not getting enough publicity, and maybe I'm just not looking in the right places, but I think it's amazing.
I think that if you're a basketball minded person, you would look at this assistant coaching staff today and be like, wow, like that is a really good start to things. And then you look at, not to get us down the line a little bit, but then you look at some of the guys that they're heavily in the transfer portal, that would suggest that Oklahoma State is playing on the same NIL field as its, you know, direct competition in this conference. I have to believe that there is a turning of the tide happening right now, and it may just be a little bit early for the general public to see that. But the three coaches, this is the best bench I think Oklahoma State's had. And I'll say it again, in the last decade.
Yeah, it's just well-rounded from every aspect. You've got Texas recruiting guys. You've got an Oklahoma State legend and someone that knows the program, who's worked in player development, in Keaton Page. And you got maybe one of the best assistant coach basketball minds in the country and most kind of popular right now coming in. So some big gets. Kate, you segued us perfectly, though, with that last comment into the transfer portal. One new person going out, but you say new. There was the rumor that he was in. He said he wasn't in, and he's not at the press conference. Javon Small, it took a few weeks, but it sounds like he's officially in. Tough loss. Maybe they can still get him to come back. Now it's Brandon Garrison, Eric Daly, Javon Small, Nas Brown, Keon Williams. You know, three of those guys, Garrison, Daly, Small, are guys you and I really, and everybody really liked, guys that we would have been fine definitely fine with staying on the roster. I do think Jamyron Keller, though, is another guy you and I really like, who it seems like is going to stay as everything looks right now. The portal's still open till May 1st, so things can always change. But what were your thoughts kind of on Jabon Small?
It's unfortunate. I feel like he would have done really well in Steve Lutz's system, but ultimately I think there are perhaps more economical options for Oklahoma State out there that could fill that gap. I think Jabon Small is going to make a lot of money in NIL this year. But I doesn't mean that I think Oklahoma State should have paid that. It's crazy also that we have these open conversations about what you should and should not pay a player. But point is that, like, if there are schools like Kansas and, you know, Kentucky, which is all rumored that schools like that are looking at him, Michigan with Mike Boynton up there now, it's like, you know what? Go do that. Let's start completely fresh with the guy that Steve Lutz wants, and let's just go. I don't get my heart broken over it. Oklahoma State went 12-20 with him at the helm. Not his fault. Just pointing it out there. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't really have anything to add. So transfer portal coming in, Cade. I'll read through the new guys. I'll give their school, their name, and their stats from last year. And then you let me know if I missed anybody and who your kind of favorites are out of this group, if that works for you. So first, we've got Great Osabar from Utah State. He's a 6'8". 245-pound forward who averaged 17.7 points a game, 9 rebounds, and 2.8 assists last season. He's not a three-point shooter. It's more of a kind of big man there. You got Colby King from Tulane, 6'2", 175 pounds, also previously played at St. John's. And I didn't mention for Osabor, he also played at Montana State. But for King, 10.4 points, 3.6 rebounds, 1.8 assists this past season. He also shot 38% from three on 3.3 attempts a game. You've got Toby Okani from Illinois Chicago. He also played at Duquesne in his college career. He's a guard, but he's listed at 6'7", 180 in this past season at 11.1 points, 6.8 rebounds, 1.9 assists. He shot 32% from three on 3.1 attempts per game. You also have Kevin Overton for Duke, from Drake, who it sounds like is actually narrowed down a list that includes Oklahoma State, Colorado State, Houston, Texas Tech, and West Virginia. Only issue with that list is West Virginia is where his former Drake head coach ended up in Darren DeVries. So we'll kind of see how that ends up. I'm assuming West Virginia is the top guy for him, but he is a 6'5", 180-pound guard who averaged 11.3 points, 3.3 rebounds, and 1.1 assists, while shooting 35% from three on 5.1 attempts. And he was only a freshman last year. Another guy who apparently has narrowed down a list, Brandon Wenzel from Wyoming. He's got a top group of TCU, Creighton, Mississippi State, TTU, Texas Tech, sorry, SMU, and Oklahoma State. He's a 6'7", 212-pound guard who averaged, I think, all like the last four guys have averaged 11 points. 11.6 points, 5.1 rebounds, 1.5 assists. He also shot 38% from three on 5.4 attempts a game. So out of the guys I've listed so far, one of the better three-point shooters. Then you've got this guy's that been linked to Oklahoma State, but I think it's safe to say he probably is going to be linked soon. Dante Allen from Western Kentucky, 6'6", 198-pound guard. He played at Kentucky before Western Kentucky. In this past season for Steve Lutz, he averaged 8.2 points, 3 rebounds, 0.6 assists. And he shot 40% from three on 4.2 attempts. So there's your shooter right there. The last guy is Micah Peavy from TCU. He also played at Texas Tech. That would be funny if he transferred to Oklahoma State playing at three different Big 12 schools. He's a 6'7", 215-pound guard who averaged almost 11 points, 10.9, 4.9 rebounds, 2.6 assists, and he shot 31% from three on 2.6 attempts per game. Cade, I know that was a lot of guys, and I know you know a lot about all these guys. I just wanted to run through them. Who are some of your favorites slash guys that realistically Oklahoma State could land?
Well, I think that you broke it down really well. I think Great Osabor is not an option. If Danny Sprinkle was Oklahoma State's head coach, I think you would be looking at your next starting, you know, four. But he's probably a Washington Husky. Kevin Overton, 10 minutes ago, just tweeted that he is still considering headed to like coming back to Drake with Ben McCollum out of Northwest Missouri State taking over there. I think that the two most likely are probably the last two that you mentioned in Brendan Wenzel and Mike Epivi. I did read that K-State and Georgetown are ones to watch for Mike Epivi. I think the third Big 12 school in 3 years makes that seem a little bit unrealistic, but who knows? I'm a big fan of him. I'll just say this. Get Brendan Wenzel on campus and show him tape of the last 6'7" point guard Oklahoma State had, and the last one that shot really well from
Great
three,
point.
And go from there, right? Like, it is a very similar type of skill set. Not obviously, it's kind of Cade Cunningham light, and I mean that with all due respect. I mean, Cade Cunningham was the number one pick in the draft, but I like all of these guys, to be totally honest with you. Kevin Overton would probably be, I mean, knowing that Great Osabor is not an option, Kevin Overton would be a phenomenal pickup. I think that they've got an uphill battle there.
Yeah. Okay. That was a perfect breakdown. Thank you for that insight on those guys. And I just kind of want to wrap, Cade, we're out of time, but we
Shocker.
Cannot leave this out from this week. Huge news coming yesterday out of Oklahoma State Wrestling. Oklahoma State wrestling coach and Oklahoma State wrestling and world wrestling legend John Smith is retiring. Assistant coach Coleman Scott will serve as the program's interim head coach. I believe they will do a full coaching search. I'm assuming Coleman Scott, you know, coming over from North Carolina as a head coach there, and now he's over here. I think that he's probably going to take over as the head coach, but I'm sure they still need to do a search and everything like that. John Smith, he's closing in on 60. I think he's about to turn 59. I think, you know, obviously coming to the end, you know, age-wise around the time that a lot of coaches retire, 33 years as a head coach. He has a dual record of 490, 73 and 6, which is most among active head coaches and third all time. In fact, there's only three coaches that have ever even gotten past 450, and he is one of them. 21 Big 12 titles, team titles, including 132 individual conference titles, 153 All-Americans. He's believed to be the most in Division I wrestling history, with an average of 4.6 All-Americans per season. He coached 33 individual national champions. Also two Hodge Trophy winners, which is like the Heisman Trophy in college wrestling. He also was a six-time world champion, two-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time NCAA wrestling champion, and arguably, and I think the only argument is maybe someone else in his family, but arguably the greatest wrestler of all time.
I mean, what more can I say, Dustin? Other than the greatest to ever do it, maybe the greatest wrestling figure of all time outside of The Rock. So, like,
yeah,
John Smith is wrestling, and he is Oklahoma State. And some have asked, where do you put the statue? And I think you could put it on top of Gallagher Iber Arena, the way a state capital puts something on top of their capital. Like, that is the level of guy we're talking about, and a great career. And some would say, and I'm not even, you know, that big into wrestling, you know this, it's on record, but some have said probably a good time for a changing of the guard. And I love that Coleman Scott is the presumed odds-on favorite, because he's been in the program. He has been underneath John Smith for years and years, learning from him. And all of the best coaching transitions usually happen that way. So I have full faith that Oklahoma State Wrestling is in good hands there. But a legend, no question, in John Smith retiring.
Yeah, Cade. It's a sad day, but like you said, you know, he's been at it a while. Might be time to kind of move on, but literally a legend leaving Oklahoma State Wrestling. So shout out to John Smith. Cowboy baseball back at it against Cincinnati at home this weekend. I'll be there on Sunday. Cowgirls take on Iowa State, who is always, you know, a little tricky, gives them some fits. So be locked in on that. Sorry we didn't get to break those down today, but we have run out of time and we wanted to make sure we got to John Smith. But appreciate it as always, Cade.
Yep. And my only comments on baseball, take that. Take that, OU. We'll see you next time.
Or Donovan LaSalle. Hey,
I
did you know
know,
his great
dude.
uncle is Dusty Baker, former
I did
manager of my
not
team,
know
the
that.
Houston Astros?
I
So,
did not know that.
yeah,
Wow.
pretty cool. If you didn't see on Twitter, or if you couldn't tell from my reaction clipping that on Twitter, I screamed and I actually thought I broke my laptop on that home run. I jumped up, scared my dogs, flipped the computer. It's amazing. It's a miracle I still got that tweet out.
Well, and it's a miracle you're standing here today to be able to tell that to us. So we appreciate you, Dustin. Hopefully another big weekend on tap for OSU baseball and softball. We'll get to them at some point. But Dustin, good talking to you as always, my friend. If you're not already, you can follow us at Feels Like 45 Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. You can follow Dustin at DustRagu, and you can follow me at Cade Webb. We will see you guys back here next week. Go Pokes.